The Linux Link Tech Show is on. Your link to GNU Linux and the latest technology. 2 hours of insightful guests, tech info, and playful banter. Free software, free speech, open technology, and open mic.
I love it.
Now, live from the Linux Link Tech Show studios, here are your hosts, Dan, Alan, Pat, and Link. Link it up and take it away.
Happy Halloween.
Yes, happy Halloween, everyone.
The Linux Link Tech Show, episode 217 for October 31st, 2007. Welcome, everybody. Who's crunching? Sorry. Is that Dan or Alan?
No, it was the ice in my drink.
Okay. Well, we have another exciting episode. We've got some good guests tonight.
Quiet.
With us, we've got Jim McQuillan and Scott. How do you say last name? Scott Balnaves.
Balnaves. Yep.
From the Linux Terminal Server Project, gentlemen. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks.
Now, Jim, we spoke to you back, and I think it was August or September of 2005, I think.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, it was a couple years ago.
Right. We ran into you at Linux World Expo in Boston in 2006.
Yeah.
So it's been quite some time since
we actually... We've crossed paths several times.
Yeah, I think so. So how's everything going for the last couple of years?
Well, we've been busy as always. We've just been crazy busy, just trying to add new features and get LTSP integrated into distros and having all kinds of fun.
Now, Scott, what do you do with the project? What's your role?
I spend probably most of my time just doing a lot of coding and support. I've been involved with the project a long time, so spend a lot of time hanging out in the IRC channel and answering questions there and in the mailing lists and just pumping new features in. So
Scott's kind of shy there. He's really for the past year he's been doing more development on LTSP than anybody. We've been fortunate to hook up with the Ubuntu folks, and they've poured a ton of resources into developing LTSP 5. And Scott has really kind of come through as he's what I'd call at this point the lead developer in LTSP. I still claim to be the project founder and project leader, but Scott is really everything LTSP right now. He's the guy that's getting all the work done as I sort of watch. That's Scott's role. He's just like the main guy right now.
You know, that's one of the things I wanted to ask you about was, I recall hearing about a year ago, the whole Ubuntu really jumping on the bandwagon with LT,
yeah,
with the Linux Terminal Server Project. Since then, I really have not heard much about what's been going on with that. What has been going on with that?
It's still very much alive within Ubuntu. In fact, Scott, didn't it just get announced that we've been promoted up to Ubuntu main? Say it better than I do. I'll let you describe it.
What's basically happening is that LTSP was mainly part of Edubuntu, and it still will be part of Edubuntu. That's sort of where our spiritual home is within the Ubuntu family. But Edubuntu is a sub distro. It's not part of Edubuntu main. What's now going to happen is the resources that would have been allocated to helping along and doing some work in LTSP within Edubuntu, is now moving up into Ubuntu itself. So we'll be part of the main distro, which is a real big step forward for us within Ubuntu. And of course, to put in a plug for Debian as well, of course Ubuntu is also in Debian as well. It's already in
LTSP is in Debian. Yeah,
LTSP is in Debian. And there's there's a lot of work flowing out of what's done in Ubuntu and back into Debian, and then there's work that's being done in Debian that's flowing into Ubuntu. So there's a real synergy going on there, and it's really working out well.
Now, Linux Terminal Server Project K through 12. That's an offshoot project, right?
Well, K12 LTSP is, it's a full distro that includes LTSP. I was really happy when they named it that, but LTSP is just a piece of it. Really, it's a full distro built on top of Fedora that's made for education. And, they took on LTSP and integrated that in as well, and Eric Harrison is the guy behind that. And, it's really in the educational world now. It's K-12 LTSP and Edubuntu are the two ways to do it. And now there's kind of a bit of competition, I think, because they both want to be the best. So it's kind of fun to watch. But it's sort of an offshoot.
You think LTSP and you immediately think of education. You would think they would go hand in hand. You know, it's a perfect fit. You would think.
Yeah. Well, It didn't start out that way. That wasn't our intention. Our intention was to solve a problem for a customer here in Detroit. And I met Eric Harrison just a few months after we released LTSP, and it was just a fantastic meeting because I got a chance to show him what we were doing. He showed me what he was doing, and it's like, wow, we have something here that'll work great together. And now, I used to say 50% of the users of LTSP are educational institutions, but I think it's much higher than that now. It's huge in the schools.
Well, where else have you seen acceptance in besides the schools?
Oh, businesses. I've got it installed in a couple of businesses myself that I'm responsible for. Scott's using it in a government place up in Winnipeg, in Canada, in Manitoba. Scott, you want to describe what you're doing up there?
My real day job is I'm the systems administrator for Legal Aid Manitoba, and we basically converted to the Linux desktop back in early 2000, and we've been running with Linux on our servers and serving the desktop down to our employees via LTSP for 7 years now. So every time I see one of these things about the Linux desktop not being quite ready yet, I've been on it for 7 years. So I always have a chuckle at that.
In a big way, there's more than 150 desktops there, right, Scott?
Sorry, you dropped out there.
There's more than 150 desktops up there that you're responsible for.
Yeah, I got about 165.
Yeah, 165, and they're all Linux. I think in their entire organization, they have a Mac for doing some GUI graphic stuff, and everything else is Linux. And
what's your biggest deployment? Do you know what's your biggest deployment as far as clients and servers?
Biggest deployment, let's see if I get the numbers right. There's a lot of ways to count this. The biggest overall one that I know of is done in Sao Paulo, Brazil, the Telecentros project. There's 6,000 servers with 20 workstations per server. So that's 120,000 workstations. You can also count in South Africa, the Shuttleworth Foundation. I don't know the number of servers and workstations, but it's about 240,000 students that are benefiting from it. And those numbers are over a year old, so it could be quite a bit higher now. Now, there's another place in Brazil I don't know if it's Brasilia or Manaus University with, they've got a cluster of 10 or 12 servers all clustered together running about 1,300 or 1,400 workstations. And that's, you know, that's a little different than the Telecentros project because these are all in one, it's in a university, and it's all these workstations all on the same network running off this clustered server arrangement that's really pretty cool.
That's pretty amazing numbers.
Those are some big ones.
That's amazing.
It's pretty neat. Yeah, you know, if you had to put in full machines in there, it'd be a maintenance nightmare. You know, just imagine installing all the applications and stuff on all those desktops. Where this way, you install it on the 12 servers and you're good to go. You know, locally, I've got a site here in Detroit with 140 or 150 workstations that are all running off of one server. I've got one in Rochester, New York with about, I think they're up to about 60 workstations right now, all running off of one server.
No, I know we asked this question.
Pretty impressive how it scales.
The last time we talked to Jim, I know we talked about this stuff, so I just want to do a little refresher for people who are not familiar with LTSP.
Sure.
Like, what are the basic requirements as far as hardware to get this up and running?
Well, it's a thin client, so right off the bat, you don't need a hard disk or you don't need any moving parts at all. What you need is a CPU, memory, a network card, and video card. I mean, it's a very minimal workstation. Right now, I think with LTSP 5 is a little bit bigger than what we were doing back in LTSP 4.2, which is probably what we just released when we talked last. But LTSP 5 needs a little bit more horsepower, but I think 64 megs of RAM and like a 200 megahertz processor actually gets the job done. It'll do it. Faster CPU is nicer, and more RAM is good. But if you don't have enough RAM, you can turn on network swap. We use NBD to swap over the network. So really, you know, a minimal workstation is a little 200 megahertz 586 type chip with 64 megs of RAM.
That's pretty minimal when you think about it.
That's pretty small. You know, the used equipment you get these days, you're getting gigahertz P3 machines now as used equipment. You know, offices are dumping truckloads of Dells that are coming off lease. You know, these Dells are 3 or 4 years old. That's some pretty powerful equipment that you're getting these days as used equipment. So for the schools and stuff, they want to use the used stuff, you can get some really good stuff.
Now, as far as bandwidth, are there any requirements? What kind of throughput you need for your network?
It's an excellent question, and it's one that I don't do a lot of measuring of. I thought we were going to have to be very, very careful with bandwidth at the beginning. I never would have believed you could run 60 or 70 workstations off a server and have it all run across the same 100 megabit network. But it sort of defied defies common sense what you can do. 100 megabit network, if you have a gigabit link between the server and the switch and 100 megabit network out to the workstations, you can run easily 100, 150 workstations. And it doesn't even saturate the network. You know, you can do other things on the net while this is happening. I don't have real numbers for you. I mean, even after, 8 years we've been around, I still don't have real solid numbers on the network bandwidth requirements. Scott, do you have anything to add?
I was just going to say, I mean, I'm running most of my servers. I'm easily running up to 50 workstations off of a single server. Running $100 switches, and we're running a full GNOME desktop with even some flash in there and some other stuff, and it's fine. It's certainly doable on lower end hardware.
Now, as far as the thin client, what actually resides on the thin client?
Well, there's no storage.
Do you want to take that one or me?
Yeah. It's a minimal computer. You know, we talked about the minimum requirements of 64 megahertz. And you guys hearing that noise?
Yeah, who's setting off fireworks in the room,
okay.
Alan?
Okay. But a thin client, you know, we sell some little thin clients that are, you know, half the size of a cigar box. And it's just a CPU, memory, and networking and video.
Hey, Alan, your floor is extremely creaky.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I had to run out to the hallway there for a second. And I don't have the mic that mutes this week, so I thought turning down the volume would work, but obviously it didn't.
No.
Sorry about that.
So when the thin client boots up, what do you have? Just a basic bootloader to get the malware interface up?
Most everything you buy these days has PXE built in. PXE is Intel's specification for pre-boot execution environment. And that's just, it's a boot ROM. And it sent out a DHCP request on your server. And that's, it's a broadcast request, so any server with a DHCP daemon running on it can respond and give the workstation an IP address. And also it'll give it the file name, the name of a file to load. And there's your bootloader. So you load a small, very small file. It's less than 32K. You load this little file that's your kind of second stage bootloader. You load that into memory. That starts executing. It's a little bit smarter than the boot ROM. It knows how to go load a Linux kernel. So it sucks down a Linux kernel from your server and boots that up. So now your Linux kernel is running, and then we mount a root file system. And because we don't have any storage locally, we mount a root file system from the server. And we used to use NFS for that, but a lot of people were just not feeling good about NFS, about the security issues with NFS. So now we still offer NFS, but now we use NBD. And Scott, you want to explain how that works, the squash file system and NBD stuff?
Yeah, I guess Vagrant and Ollie did the work on that one, and they basically came up with the idea that what we could do is build the sort of environment that the thin client would be running up on the server, and then run squash FS against it, which probably cuts down the space of it by about two-thirds, and then it gets served out with NBD, which is network block devices. So it ends up being just one large monolithic image file that the thin client can then basically mount and read. The NBD server process is all in user space, so there's no magic kernel bits that need to happen, and it basically runs as the user nobody. So there's no security issues to deal with, and it really cuts down on, of course, the amount of bandwidth or the amount of data that's going to have to be pulled across the network, and has provided us in a lot of cases with some fairly significant network speed up, and plus, like Jin said, basically eliminated the need for NFS for people who were feeling uncomfortable with it.
So that's Scott kind of described the root file system, how we get it. Once that root file system gets mounted, it starts up similar to any Linux box. It runs init and sets up some daemons. But then the most important thing that it does is it launches the X server. So that gives you your GUI environment. So once you have the X server up, you have a graphical screen. Then you have two ways of getting up to the server. We used to use just XDMCP. That's the X Display Manager Control Protocol, and that just gives you a GUI login. But that's really not terribly secure. It's you know, you're sending your password across the network in basically in X packets that aren't encrypted in any way. So now the default is we use LDM, which is the LTSP Display Manager, and it uses SSH for the login. So you'd use LDM, you'd send your, you know, you'd do your login through SSH, which is nice and secure. And then we just launch the session from the server. We launch, you know, GNOME or KDE or whatever your session is. We launch that from the server. It displays on the workstation. It comes across through SSH, so it's nice and secure. And you have your login. You know, you have your session running. So you have your window manager and your, you know, your icons on the desktop and everything. So it appears like you're sitting at sitting right there at the computer that's running your GUI apps, but you know the server could be in another room or another floor or another state. It's all nice and secure that way.
Now, I guess the advantage of the client pulling down the image every time is that you can do updates on the server side and you don't have to touch the clients, right?
Yes. It makes administration really simple. You can, you know, one update on the server will take care of all your clients. So if you have a new kernel you wanna install, you know, if, you know, there's always new kernels coming out to handle security issues. And that's just the image to get the thing booted. But if you wanna install the newest version of OpenOffice or the newest version of Firefox or whatever, you just install it on the server. You install it on one server once, and that takes care of all the clients that connect up to it. So administration is just so much easier.
Yeah, the big thing with thin clients is that you basically get to forget about the desktop entirely. I don't manage 165 desktops. I manage 8 servers, and that's all I have to do. And so it's just I just ignore the desktop now. I've got some of my desktops are going on 5 years old. And because they're thin clients, they have no fans in them, they have no moving parts, they're still just as good today as they were 5 years ago. And I'm, you know, we originally sort of expected to get 5 or 6 years out of them, and we're now bumping up our estimates, and we figure we're going to be able to get 10 years on a thin client, which is just amazing in today's IT market.
Now, do you see a lot of, like, you know, specific thin clients, you know, not recycled old machines, but, you know, manufactured thin clients? Is that a big business these days? I'm familiar with, like, Wyse terminals. I'm sure there's many others out there.
There's Wyse, and there's HP, and in fact, there's Neoware, but they just got bought by HP. I just saw the announcement last week or 2 weeks ago about that. And then we sell thin clients at DiscosWorkstations.com. A little plug for that, but the workstations we sell there, that helps fund the project. So we do a modest amount of sales of real thin client hardware. So the stuff's out there. You know, you see things like the Evox E2300. That's about the smallest thin client you'll find. It's this little, I don't know, it's about 5 inches by 5 inches and maybe an inch and a half thick. And it's a whole thin client. It's got everything inside it that you need. You just plug it in, you know, plug a keyboard in and a mouse and plug your video in and your network and power, and you're ready to go. And it's just this little tiny box. And so, there's a lot of thin clients out there now, a lot of dedicated thin client hardware.
I'm looking at the Distal's Workstation website, and the one that jumps at me is the little cube, the LTS Term 1000 Pixie.
That's the same thing. That's the E2300.
Okay.
That's what I'm talking about. It's just a nice little aluminum box with stuff inside that makes it work.
That's pretty affordable.
It's $115 or something. It's cheap, and it's what's cool about that is it's built just the right size to slap onto the back of a LCD monitor. Most LCD monitors are the stands are connected on the back by a NEMA specified or an ANSI. I forget who the organization is, but there's a 100 millimeter bolt pattern. It's 4 bolts spaced 100 millimeters apart, and that's the same pattern as the holes in the workstation. and the workstation comes with longer screws. So you take off the stand, you slide this workstation in between the stand and the monitor, and you put these longer screws in, and you got yourself a fully contained workstation with a monitor and everything built in.
200 megahertz.
Yeah, it's 200 megahertz, 128 megs of RAM, I think, and that's not the most powerful client out there, but it's working pretty well right now with the latest version of Ubuntu.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I take a minute here if I can. You know, I mentioned Scott is like the lead developer right now. He's doing far more work than I am on it. But we've got a couple other guys too. Ubuntu has been very, very generous in their resources that they've thrown our way. We've had Oliver Grauert working nonstop for what's got about 2 years now, a year and a half or 2 years.
Yeah, but a year and a half, 2 years now, easily.
Yeah, and we've got Vagrant Cascadian. He's a Debian developer, and he's been working hard as well. He's doing the Debian stuff. Oliver is doing the Ubuntu stuff, and Scott's kind of overseeing the whole thing and kind of making things work. So that's what Ubuntu has done for us. It's been great. Without their help, I'm not sure where we'd be right now. I don't think we'd be nearly as far along as we are. But in addition to that, we're finally seeing some real activity from the other distros. We've been going after Novell and Red Hat, trying to get some traction, and finally it's really happening. With Novell, they've got an open Kiwi project, and they've kind of grafted LTSP on top of that, and they're making really good headway there. But what's really exciting right now is the work that the Fedora guys are doing. Warren Tagami, he's the guy that created Fedora initially while he was a student in Hawaii. He's working like nonstop right now on integrating LTSP5 into the next version of Fedora. And I've heard he's made great strides, and I'm going to be seeing him this weekend. We're going to be out in Maine for a little hack fest, and Warren's going to be with us, and we're going to get a chance to really see how far he's made it. But that's exciting, the fact that Fedora is on board with it.
Well, that's great news that you guys are actually getting some traction from some of the other bigger distros.
Yeah, it's pretty nice. We're really enjoying it. I think we're fortunate there that it's happening.
So when can we expect you to sign a patent agreement with Microsoft?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're gonna hang around the Novell guys for a while first so we learn how to do it.
I have always been fascinated with your project, although I have never actually taken the time to sit down and install it. Anytime I get a piece of hardware to do it on, something always comes up. But it is really, really, really cool. And in that similar vein, that market that you guys are in, what is your opinion of Citrix and their recent? Was it Citrix and the recent acquisition of, was it Zen Technology? No, wait, what was it?
Yeah, yeah. They're it's interesting what they're doing. You know, they're seeing that they can't just keep doing thin clients. Really, to do thin clients, they really have to do clustering. They really have to do virtualization, and you know, virtualization gives you a way of I think more easily clustering lots of machines in one area, and then you run your thin clients off of that as your you know, that's your portal into the server grid or whatever you want to call it. It's interesting. You know, we've kind of looked at Citrix. There's features in Citrix that we've been adding to LTSP, and I think we're finally at a point where we've got local devices working extremely well. Citrix has been doing that for a while. We've got encryption, which Citrix has had. We've got local audio, you know, where you can plug your plug your headphones into your thin client and listen to the music that's being served off your server. Citrix is interesting, but I think we've got some advantages too. What we're pushing on right now is the ability to run applications on your thin client. I'm talking about, let's say for years, we've been all about, you know, run Firefox on the server, display it on your client. So you get 100 users running Firefox on the server, displaying it on the client. You need a pretty beefy server. So now we're working real hard, and Scott's got a fantastic plan for making it all come true. We're working on it where it'll be very easy to run Firefox on the thin client. So now instead of 100 users running their Firefox off the server, now we could take like 500 users, and they use the server to boot up. They use the server to go get Firefox. But once they're executing Firefox, it's running locally on the thin client. It's a way to really, really stretch, I think, the scalability of thin clients. And I don't think Citrix is doing that. I don't think they're running Firefox or Internet Explorer or anything down on the client.
You know what else Citrix has that you guys don't have? Exorbitant licensing costs.
Yes. Yeah, they're not the cheapest solution on the block. I'll admit we've got a ways to go, I think, to be to really be better than Citrix in all ways. You know, we've got the cost beat. You know, we got the price. We beat them on that, no problem. We got features that are fantastic, and I think we beat them on the features. Another area we need to work on, and it's happening right now, is the management utilities. You know, Citrix has a nice point-and-click management tools for managing all the workstations, and we're getting those right now. I think the latest release of Ubuntu has a pretty nice thin client manager that helps, and it's getting better. So, we don't have those costs.
I just wanted to interject here and say one of the other things that is kind of a little-known feature, and I just want to put in a plug for it. Francis Giraldot from the Neil Exterm project sort of came on, and he's basically sort of committing to become kind of upstream LTFP. And one of the features that he and I worked on and got into in this version of LTFP that's in Gutsy is the ability to load balance servers. So you can now set up multiple servers and have the thin clients do some load balancing between the two, which is another big scalability feature. And we've got plans to make that even better and more fancy for next time around. So there's really, as we're beginning to touch more distros and interact with more people, the developer pool begins to widen, and I guess what I'd like to see is every time we sort of get ported to a distro, I'd love it if we could get a developer in the distro who gets bitten by the thin client bug like we have, and gets subsumed upstream into and begins to consider themselves upstream LTSP, and we can continue our Borg-like takeover of the thin client desktop space.
Yeah, in fact, takeover is probably a good word because over the years there's been various, I guess I'll call them competitors to LTSP. In the open source world, we're all trying to work towards the same thing, but still there's different projects trying to do the same thing. But over the years, there's been like the Left Disks project that's been in Debian for a long time, and that's a thin client project. Well, the guy that created that is Vagrant, and he's now one of us. He's an LTFP developer, true and true. And there was just a declaration a couple of days ago about Left Disks is dead. Long live LTSP! And that, I'm not sure who made that proclamation, but Vagrant is.
I think it was Vagrant
himself. He's the creator of Left Disks, and now he's one of us. And then, again, Francis from the Mila Extern project, he's one of us now, too. And we'll take anybody. it's been great because we're getting some awesome talent, guys that have kind of found other ways to solve the problems that we're solving. They bring their insight into our project, and it's fantastic.
There's a discussion on the IRC about wireless. Can you run a thin client over wireless? I would think there would be issues with booting up when getting the wireless drivers over, right?
The simple answer is yes, you can do it. There's some issues, and it turns out the simplest way to do it is actually pretty simple. You just get one of those little wireless, Linksys calls it a gaming adapter. Other people have different names for it, but it's just a little wireless, it's like an access point. But it's a
wireless fridge, right?
Yeah, but you use that, you plug all your thin clients into that little wireless access point, and that access point is used to connect to your other access point. So it's a bridge. It's a wireless bridge that connects your thin client to the wireless network. It turns out to be really difficult to actually try to use a real wireless card in your thin client because you don't have any operating system yet. You know, and to use a wireless card, you need enough of a kernel to handle PCMCIA or card bus or USB. And then it's got to initialize the wireless device, and it's got to set it up for all your security. And it's got to know about ESS IDs and you know, web keys or whatever method you're using. And then it has to connect up to the server. And it's like a chicken and egg problem. You don't have enough of a kernel to do that until you connect up. Then you can go get the kernel to do that. So the easy way is just use a wireless bridge.
Gotcha. Now, I remember when last time we talked to you, Jim, we were talking about multimedia codecs and being able to stream different multimedia.
Yeah.
Has there been any inroads with that?
I haven't spent any time with it. You know, we've been sort of so busy with getting LTSP5 up and running the way we wanted it. And my theory has always been keep the data encrypted in the best format possible as far as you possibly can. So, you know, the deal would be run your decoder on the thin client. And I think with the local app stuff that we're going to work on this weekend, we're going to get much closer to that.
Yeah, I'm
you know, the ability to run your rhythm
app.
Box or whatever.
No,
sorry,
Scott, what was that? I was thinking that the local apps is going to get us probably three-quarters of the way towards that, and if not all of the way. We're hoping for big things out of that.
Yeah, and really, local apps is something we've said we had it 7 years ago, and we've always had it, but it just hasn't been very easy to set up. It's not an out of box solution. It's like if you really know what you're doing, you know how to set up network authentication and your home directory across a network, an NFS file system, you can get an app to run locally. But now what we're working towards is right out of the box. You set an option in our config file that says, "Yeah, I want to run apps locally," and it just needs to happen. And that's what we're going to work on. That's what we're going to pour all of our development effort into, starting this weekend.
Yeah.
You know what else? Not to bring up Citrix again, but. this is another thing that maybe you guys could do. This would be cool. I for the first time in my life I used GoToMeeting the other day.
Yeah.
And I noticed, if I'm not mistaken, that is powered by Citrix MetaFrame.
Okay, could be. I've heard of GoToMeeting for a long time, but I don't know how it works.
I don't know exactly how it works either, but what it allows you to do is display the contents of your Windows machine, the screen,
right,
on remote systems. I want something like that for Linux.
We're doing something like that with X11 VNC. It's a module for the X server that allows us to take control of a user's desktop, and we see what they see. Or they see what we see, and we can control it. I don't think it's exactly like GoToMeeting, but I think it would solve a big part of that problem.
So that sounds like a good idea, because I am so sick of hearing about GoToMeeting, and I would love to see something like that on the Linux side of things, and BSD side. And
yeah,
I think you guys could do it, and Pat'll pay you.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about GoToMeeting a little bit later, Dan.
Yeah, it's with LTSP, it's really about people having an itch and they want to scratch it. And, it's why I created LTSP in the first place. I had a need and I had to come up with a solution. And that's what I did. Then Scott got on board because he wanted better local device support. So here comes Scott and, he gets out his bag of tricks and jumps in and starts helping. And a go-to-meeting type thing, if somebody really needs it, it's going to happen.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah, there's a certain podcast that has GoToMeeting as a sponsor, and I don't think GoToMeeting even has a Linux client.
No, it only runs on Windows.
Yeah, it's a Windows tool.
Yeah. So one of the questions that came across the IRC was from Mo, I don't know what the hell his name is. What was it exactly?
Nothing like abusing the people.
Yeah. Why
West USA?
Yeah. Why would you use a home network LTSP instead of Remote X or SSH or VNC? Or Remote X over SSH or VNC?
Why would you use a thin clients in the house instead of just setting up a separate machine?
Instead of a Remote X or through SSH or VNC?
Well, it really kind of depends on the hardware you have and the amount of management and administration you want to do. I've been running LTSP in my house, gosh, for, I don't know, 6 or 7 years, almost since the beginning. That's all my wife uses. She doesn't need a full computer on her desk. She's got a little thin client. I don't have to worry about, keeping that thing running. It just works. All I got to do is make sure my server's running, which I need for other purposes anyway. It really, does LTSP make sense in the home network? Maybe, maybe not. Although there are some people using LTSP and they're running Myst TV on top of it, so they're using LTSP as a set-top box. It boots the set-top box for their television to run Myst TV.
Another common use is you'll find a lot of parents will set up a thin client for their kids to use. They'll lock down the environment so they can't, accidentally erase anything and, set up some parental filtering of the web. So that's, we get quite a number of people in the channel, looking to do that sort of thing.
Sure, another huge feature, and maybe it's not so important anymore because you can buy really quiet machines, but, everybody who's listening right now, if they just stop and listen to the noise in their office, or their den, or their bedroom, or wherever it happened to be. The day I moved my server down into the basement, and all I have is a thin client on my desk, boy, did things change in my office. It got so quiet. It was beautiful. Move that noisy stuff down in the basement.
So as far as new features in the newer releases, What have you guys done? What have you implemented that's notable?
Oh, Scott, you want to cover this since you've done, all the work?
Well, I guess in the last release in Gutsy, we fixed a lot of the speed issues. We got the load balancing server stuff in. I think for next time, we're targeting getting the... all of the local app stuff in, probably getting things cleaned up a little bit. I think our focus for probably at least for upstream for the next little while is going to be helping stabilizing the code base for a bit and trying to help other distros to get it implemented in upstream. So that's sort of where I sort of see it going for the next little while anyway.
I think that's pretty well said. I think that covers where we're headed. Ultimately what we want is for thin client support to just be there in every distro. I've told people before, I don't care if we call it LTSP. I don't care really too much about it. Let's just make sure that there's thin client support built into the distro. So that you can take any, take your favorite distro, load up your server, plug in a thin client, and away you go. It should just be there automatically.
Yeah, I think with any distro, you should be able to just type, either apt-get LTSP or yum install LTSP, or if you're on Slackware, you can do like tar XZBF LTSP.
Don't forget,
it should be there.
Yeah, forget it. We can emerge it too.
Yeah.
Right. It should just be there.
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, an option that you turn on or a package you install, and it's just there. And really, the past 2 years, again working with Ubuntu, with LTSP 5, the greatest thing with LTSP 5 is the fact that we're using distro packages to build the thin client operating system. But LTSP is just an operating system. It's a distro that sits on top of another distro. It's a distro that's served by a distro, right? We need to get an operating system down to the thin clients, but it needs to sit on a host server at some point. So now we're using distro packages to build that. In Ubuntu and Debian's case, it's apt. We have to install the whole thing. With Fedora and Red Hat, it's going to be RPM, and I guess with SUSE, it's going to be RPM, or Yum, or Yast, or whatever whatever tools you use. But it's going to be native distro packages being installed. The huge benefit there is the distros don't have to QA a whole bunch of different kernels. They QA their kernel, and it works with LTSP. They QA their Bash or their their shell utils or their, whatever. And that's what we use in the LTSP on that machine. They don't have any, they have very few. All we supply now at LTSP is a specification for how thin clients should work and a handful of binaries or a handful of programs that help make it happen. Everything else is distro code.
Yeah, exactly.
Great stuff. You guys are doing fantastic work, and the project is really great.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, keep doing a great job. And I'm glad to see, particularly Ubuntu jumping on board, because I really like Ubuntu. And I hope you get more support from other distros soon.
It's happening. It really is. It's happening right now.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the next Fedora. I'm an Ubuntu Debian user, but I'm really excited to see Fedora actually getting the job done right now.
So when do you see the Mac Terminal Services server project?
The MTSP? I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I hear people, they want a BSD terminal server project. I have to keep reminding people what the hell an LTSP stands for. You'd be surprised how many people come into our channel and want to know how to boot a Windows machine disklessly.
There you go.
They don't understand what the L stands for.
Lucky.
They figure since we're good at it with Linux, we should be good at it with Windows too, right?
Well, I don't see why you couldn't be, right?
Well,
I mean, you just
first
have
there
to...
has to be a desire.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Aside from that, then you have to crack open the code there, and you know how easy that is.
Yeah. If Linux weren't open source, we never would have done LTSP. It just would have been impossible for us to get down to that level of the internals to know how to make it all happen. Not that we had to hack the kernel. In fact, we didn't. We at one point we had a few patches in the kernel. We don't need them anymore. But. Just knowing how the system works is what's been so good for us. Seeing how it works, getting a look under the hood.
So is that, do you guys, aside from your LTSP work, do you guys primarily work in Linux and your other endeavors?
Scott's a system administrator at Legal Aid, and that's a Linux job. I've got my own business doing. I'm in the healthcare industry, but all the stuff I'm doing is on top of Linux. I'm building healthcare applications on top of Linux. That's what I do. I touch Windows almost never, very seldom. I guess I'm fortunate in that I don't have to play in the Windows world. I can do it all on Linux.
That must be a difficult environment to work in, the healthcare environment, with regards to insurance.
It can be. I've been doing it for so long. I kind of know the ropes a little bit, and it's not so bad. I like it.
Well, I want to thank you guys for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. It's been too long since we talked to you last time, and I invite you guys to come back at any time and give us updates on the project. You guys are doing fantastic work. Thank you.
Awesome
thank you.
Project.
Thank you very much, guys.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for all that you do.
All right. Thanks
Happy
for
Happy Halloween.
Hey, you too.
Happy Halloween.
Take it easy. Thank
Bye.
You.
Bye.
All right.
Bye. See you later, Alan. Your time here is done.
I'm still here.
Your time here is done.
Cleaning floor, ruining the interview.
Yes.
Oh, sorry about that.
Let's
and
get
someone
Link
coughing
back.
At Dan's house.
Somebody was coughing in my house.
That was my wife coughing.
Yeah, that wasn't over here again.
She sounded like she was dying, man. Is she okay?
She's dead.
I mean, she's okay. Well, she's been sick for a couple of weeks now, but she'll be alive still.
She got the HIV?
No, she has a kidney infection right now, actually.
Oof.
In her throat?
Yeah. No, the coughing was just, from running in and out of the house with the trick-or-treaters and stuff, but...
Oh. Trick-or-treaters tonight?
That was the reason I wasn't on 2 weeks ago.
Because of trick-or-treating?
No, because she was in the hospital, why.
Okay.
You're an idiot, Dan.
Well, come on. His comment was, she's been running in and out because of the trick-or-treaters, and that's why
you know
I wasn't...
You exactly what he meant.
That's why I wasn't on the show a couple weeks ago. is it trick-or-treat over there tonight? In Easton?
Yes.
Yeah, because it is
over there. Yeah, it was until 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. They have, prescribed hours, 6 to 8.
No. Well, wait a minute.
They try to.
Well, who's trick or treating at your house at 9 o'clock at night?
Nobody was.
Well, you just
she was up here, but like, she was out. She was downstairs earlier, and she came up here and had a coughing spell.
Oh, okay. It's all cleared up now. I understand.
Okay.
I hope she starts feeling better soon, because that really sucks.
Yeah, hasn't been fun for her, but she'll get better.
Dan posting those creepy pictures of his roommate from college. Photoshop pictures. That guy on the couch looks like you, but just fat, bloated, and drunk.
That's the way I looked at Ohio Linux Fest. fat, bloated,
and drunk. That narrows it down.
What did you do that on Photoshop back in the day?
No, that's all. I don't use Photoshop. I've never really used Photoshop. I opened Photoshop up a couple of times, and I absolutely just liked it.
You used GIMP while you were in college?
No, that wasn't done when I was in college. Those were roommates from... That wasn't the college picture. That was after college. I mean, I was just saying they were one of my roommates. No.
So this is after you moved out in the real world?
Yeah. Yeah, that was years after. I didn't even have a graphical environment when I was in college. I was using a 286 or something?
DOS.
Yeah, actually it was on a DOS. Back in the day.
Dan was hammering it out on a tablet.
I was etching it on a sketch, an Etch-a-Sketch.
Did the light come back?
I thought he did.
Yep.
We should kick him off again, just for shits and giggles. Right, Link?
Yep.
Link, why don't you talk about the big news this week?
What big news is that?
What have you been working on, man? It looks so great.
It's not done yet.
You're getting closer.
Yeah, but it's not done.
It's looking good. What I had mentioned last week about my version of Bash Potter with the stuff, I've been testing it out this week. There's one little glitch with it, and that's the checking to see whether the that podcast.log file, I think that's what it's called, exists or not before, which I got to clean up. And it's been working fine for me.
Works good for me.
I use it every day, and then I got to take it to the next level. But I haven't had much time to work on it because I had a presentation to give today at work, and I've been doing that. So I tend to, I will devote my time this upcoming week to finishing that off and starting the second part of that project. And everybody will be happy. And I kind of get the gist from the other guys that they're going to disagree with me, but I have to say, I've been ecstatic with my gutsy upgrades. I've been extremely happy. But I seem like I am in the minority with regards to reading your blog postings.
Well, my issue was running it on my piece of shit made by Chinese slave labor Walmart laptop. So that's just putting it into perspective. I haven't upgraded my my AMD 64 Kubuntu workstation. Haven't done that yet. So I'll probably be doing that probably next weekend.
I haven't upgraded here at home yet, so I'm still on 6.1. Although I do run it at work. I have it running in a VMware session at work, so I like it.
I just for giggles, I put the live CD in my workstation, the gutsy live CD, and I cannot get it to, yeah, it's brown, and I can't get it to work with my dual monitor setup. For some reason, I have an old NVIDIA card, and the only drivers that are available in gutsy right now for NVIDIA are the newer drivers, and when I use that with my old card and try and do dual monitors, what I get is no monitors. So that's not cool. I did stick it in my laptop though and played on the live CD for a few minutes and it seemed to work fine. However, I don't think I'm ready to upgrade my laptop just yet. And what Dan was talking about that I've been working on here and there is an update to the website. I know that that it really needs to be updated in the worst way. So I've been putting things together piece by piece, and it's still not done yet. But if you're interested to have a look at the testing version of the site, or what works from the testing version of the site, you can find it at tllts.org/test. And if you would, you know, take a gander at that and go ahead and let me know, you know, what your thoughts are of it. I tried to take a lot of your suggestions in kind that you left on the forum. I fixed the search routine so that it does, you know, more what it really should do, and changed the look of it and the feel of it quite a bit, and I think it looks quite a bit better.
Instead of going high tech, we should go backwards with it, make it like, you know, straight out of like 1996, you know?
Yeah. Oh yeah, with the
static,
and just the space backgrounds, you know, with
yeah,
stars and stuff in the back, and scrolls with the text and that kind of stuff.
A couple of blink
really
tags.
Loud, yeah. Blink tags and really loud, nasty graphics.
And a marquee. It has to have a marquee.
Animated GIFs on there, like Snoopy and shit. I don't know. Something.
And it should only work in Internet Explorer.
Well, we don't have to be that mean about it.
In fact, if you visit it with anything but Internet Explorer, it should recommend that you download the latest version of Internet Explorer from Microsoft's website to properly view the page.
Yeah, put the little works best with symbol down on the bottom.
Yeah.
Because Internet Explorer is the pinnacle of browsers.
So they say.
The pinnacle of success, huh?
You know, the funny thing is I'm sitting here using the new show index search thing, and I just searched for Alan Speaks, and there's only 4 episodes where that happens.
Well, I'm glad we're making number 5 here.
Let me see something here. Alan might have spoken in 4 episodes, but Tim McGraw has been brought up in at least 6 episodes. So go figure.
That's downright frightening, actually.
You have some kind of legacy going on here, Alan.
We need to find a way to get our Google hit for Tim McGraw number 1 for TLLTS. That would be awesome. Actually, let's see. If we do Tim McGraw and Linux, what do we get?
Damn, I just realized I'm going to try to like find the new page. And here it is. I've knocked the connector out of the laptop here. I'm going, what the hell can I get anything all of a sudden? Like, oops. Maybe I ought to invest $9 in a good cable here. One that I haven't broken off all the connectors on.
That would probably help.
Yeah, those little tabs do actually help to keep it connected to the laptop.
Oh, well. Okay, I'm back. Did I miss Alan's review of Leopard?
Are you running Leopard, Alan?
No, not. I haven't bought anything yet, no. I have a desire to have to like, run out there and get it first. Although, I was telling Pat earlier, I was actually at the mall when it came out, and I did get a t-shirt. So, not that I'll ever wear it, but I got a t-shirt anyways.
How'd you get that? They're just handing them out?
I walked in and they handed me a t-shirt. So I'm like, okay, thank you.
You should have handed it back to him and said, hells no.
He wipes his butt with it, hands it right back.
Can you imagine a look on their face? And they would have just had this, like, elitist, entitled look of horror. Like, oh my God, what's wrong with this guy? Sorry, Alan, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just... Is it me or does Alan sound like crap? Static. I don't know. Do I sound like crap?
Mac?
No.
Sometimes you get a little louder and it cracks a little bit. You're over modulated.
Right, let me turn it. I have the other mic on, the good mic, and maybe I'm like way too high on it.
This is why we don't have Alan talk, because he ruins the show.
Yeah, I just, yeah.
What's interesting is that Ars Technica review of Leopard, it was like 4 pages into the review, and all they were talking about was like, packaging and icons.
Were they glowing about how wonderful they were, or what?
Yeah, you know, it started with, you know, how the box that the freaking software came in, how great it was.
You know, oh, when you said packaging, I thought you meant, like, how they package applications.
No, I'm talking about the actual physical packaging of the box.
Well, what was so special about it?
I don't know. They loved it, you know. So, you know how those Mac frickin' reviews are. It's a big circle jerk, you know.
Well, it's completely innovative with Spaces. I mean, prior to Spaces, what was there? Etch-a-Sketch. And now there are Spaces. And you got to ask yourself, what was the world really doing before Spaces came along? I don't know, and I shudder to think if the world would ever go back into those dark ages without Spaces. Thank you, Steve Jobs.
Because Spaces is innovation. That and the backup utility that goes to space.
I haven't seen that. I was in and out there because Carolyn was looking in another store, so I was like wandering around. So,
what is that? The go back machine or something?
Something like
or
that.
Or time machine?
Time Machine, I think it's called, yeah.
You know, it's really, you know, not a bad idea. It's just a fancy interface over top of GoBack, essentially what it is. We get hate mail for that, too. No, it's a little more better than GoBack. You can retrieve individual files. I think you could do that in GoBack, too, but I don't know. Which makes you wonder why nobody has ever put together something like that for Linux.
Yeah. And you listen to, like,
Wouldn't
Mac
it be
Break
called
Weekly?
RSync?
Exactly. You listen to Mac Break Weekly, and those guys are all, you know, all giving each other high fives because they have a VNC now. Ooh.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that on some mailing list that I listened to today.
What? They bundled VNC with it now by default?
About this new VNC connection, and I'm like, you know what? VNC is pretty old, man, you know?
So did Apple, like, pull in VNC now?
Apparently you can do it from the, like, the Finder kind of thing. It's built in now or something like that.
Okay. I know that the VNC client and server was available, or was available for OS X. I've always found it a little kludgy, and I know that their Apple Remote Desktop product had the capability of working with VNC. So I guess they just took it to the next level, because that's innovation, baby.
Yeah, buddy.
Hey, did you guys read the emails this week? We got some interesting ones.
Would you care to elaborate, Pat? Because we got
sure. One that jumped out at me was from Curtis. It says, I recently discovered your podcast show and start at the beginning. Currently, I'm listening to episode number 22. The three of you create a great mix of energy. I really enjoy your podcast. And then he goes on to say, you know,
he'll be shocked when he starts to hear you on there.
Yeah.
How did he know there was three of us? Because Alan never talked.
About Myth TV.
What's that?
How did he know there was three of us if Alan never talks?
I used to talk a while back.
Says, you are continually recommending Slackware, so I tried it. However, I'm unable to complete it. His install he's talking about. Also, you keep talking about people joining you in the IRC chat. How is that done? Thanks, Curtis.
Did this email come just to you?
No. Technical with the Linux Link. Came yesterday night. That's last night.
Yesterday night?
Last night.
Yeah.
I never got it. It must have gotten filtered into my spam folder or something. That's odd.
Can't help you, Dan.
Yeah, we all got it. I just didn't respond to it because I was, you know, slam busy. I've actually been slam busy all week long for the last couple weeks, but...
And
you know,
he
brings up a good point about the Slackware stuff. And actually, I think any of the Slackware, you know how they have those distro reviews? Any of those will teach you how to install Slackware proper. As far as the rest of it, like doing the drivers and stuff like that, I would say, you know, do the Google kind of thing for that. I don't know, what do you think, Dan? Like installing API drivers and...
Oh. Well, I've never installed API drivers, number one. If it's anything like installing the NVIDIA drivers, just follow the README file for that, or the installation file. I've never had problems installing stuff in Slackware.
Me either.
Now, I know API
drivers, I'm assuming they're the same thing as, like, installing them under Ubuntu, and pretty much, you download the driver, you compile it, and then it gives you a utility to it, and I can't even remember what the hell it was called. It was API config, I think, maybe, or something like that, and that helps you set everything up. It's not really very hard.
See, I know that
the API driver
is kludgy to begin with, so I've never had an ATI card, unfortunately, that I've been able to experiment around with it. I've kind of shied away from ATI because of the kludginess of the drivers.
I saw an article today about the new ATI drivers, and they give it very good benchmarks, actually. Better than the Windows version.
Well, we shall see when they when I get an ATI card somewhere.
I don't have any ATI. I've never owned any ATI video cards.
I really wish I could have seen that email. Maybe Pat or somebody could forward it to me. I don't know how.
We'll forward it back to you.
Yeah, how I lost it. Of course, I was intrigued by Link's email about the biggest ghost hunter ever.
He's probably working on his own show for local cable around here.
You guys want to elaborate what we're talking about?
It was one of Link's best friends.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? I don't think we need to elaborate any more than putting the link into the IRC channel, and they can recall from past experiences with the groups mentioned in there and infer from the rest of that.
Yeah.
I would like to make a few comments about some stuff.
You put the link to the Morning Call article on there, too.
Is there one?
I think you just put it up there, Dan.
Yep, yep, that's it.
Oh, I thought you meant something other than what I put up there.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I said that before I actually looked at you, what you put up there.
Yeah, okay.
I'm sorry, I'm a little slow.
This past week...
past my bedtime, what can I say?
There was a pretty cool article on LXer. A link to an article on LXer about a liquid scaling plugin for the GIMP. I have posted the page. It's liquidrescale.wiki.com is the download page for it. It is a really, you know, a really cool plugin for the GIMP, and if you've ever used the scale. The scale function. That's actually the download. Let me put the URL. Let me put the actual URL for the project in there. If you've ever used the scale plugin or ever used, you know, scaling an image, you know this. As you scale an image down, sometimes it could get distorted and not look right, and things get out of proportion. Well, the Liquid Rescale plugin aims to improve that by not just merely scaling stuff, but removing actual irrelevant pixels and condensing part of the image so that in addition to not just scaling the entire image, you can scale portions of the image so that it sort of flows properly around the main object that you want to highlight. You have to look at the web page, read up about it. Because I've only played around with it a little bit. I've watched some videos on the type of technology that you're talking about. It looks really cool. Give the Liquid Rescale GIMP plugin a shot. It's really easy to install. I had it installed under Gutsy in a few seconds. They have packages for Debian, Gutsy, Fedora. It's definitely a really cool plugin to check out. I'm going to see if I can find the LXer article on there and post that too, because the video was just with the capabilities of this type of technology and how it works was pretty eye-opening and enlightening, and it's exciting stuff, particularly if you're involved in graphic design or at all interested in touching up your own images. Did any of you guys see this, what I'm talking about?
No, I haven't.
No.
Oh, it's definitely worth a look. Definitely. Let me see. I should be able to find this on here. GIMP Tricks, Liquid Rescaling by Example. And here is the article on PolishLinux.org. Really cool stuff. Posted right there. So check it out. In addition to that, I was pleasantly surprised to get an email from your friend and my friend and everybody's friend and friend of the tech show, Gorkon. Today, raving about using Wicked as a replacement for a network manager. Now, I brought Wicked up on the show a few weeks ago. I believe I first heard about it. It might have been on a Linux Action show, might not have been. I forget where it was. Anyway, have you guys tried Wicked yet?
Have not.
No.
Have you guys? No. Are any of you guys using Network Manager?
No.
No, I avoid it like the plague because it doesn't work for shit.
get rid of it and install and give Wicked a try. WICD Wicked is a fantastic program. It does a far better job than Network Manager does, and I cannot understand why they would not include Wicked as a default network managing utility. It does both wired and wireless connections. It has excellent WEP and WPA support. It's just all around a great application. You can find it at Wicked, that's WICD. .sourceforge.net. Really, really good stuff. And since we're on a roll here, I can give a couple of bitches and complaints here this past week. Now, my Gutsy installation, like I said, I've been loving it. It's been wonderful, but I did encounter a glitch in one of the applications that I use quite frequently. Yeah, shocking horror. F-Spot. I've been using F-Spot for managing my photos for a good couple of months now, and I have a couple thousand, about 1,000 photos, a little more than 1,000 in pictures in there. Everything was running fine, and after the update to Gutsy, the new version of F-Spot, I believe they switched to using the SQLite 3 as opposed to SQLite. And for some reason, it was a little horky. So I read somewhere to install SQLite and then 3 and then make sure... Or actually, not SQLite 3. My mistake. I read somewhere that they switched this, and the way you get around it is to run the update database utility. But, lo and behold, even though there was warnings that I should make a backup of my database, I didn't. And I ran that, and it still didn't fix the problem, so I... downloaded and installed the SQLite, the original SQLite 1 packages, and that fixed the problem that I was having with FSpot, but it made my SQLite, the FSpot database, unusable by my system, so I had to re-import all my photos, which means I lost all my tags, and that was primarily the reason why I was using FSpot, because I just loved the tagging feature of it. It was so simple, so easy. And it was very fast, and now I got to go back and re-tag all my photos.
So, do you have your database backed up?
I didn't back up my database because I'm an idiot.
You didn't back up your home partition or anything like that? Because I was going to say, why don't you just, you know, stick your database on another machine and export the data to a SQL file and then re-import it in?
I could do that, but no, I see I was stupid and didn't make the backup of that. And I am lax in my backups, so I suffer. I suffer. And speaking of SQLite, I actually got to, in part of my presentation today that I gave at work regarding security, I was actually messing around with SQL injections and playing around with those, and I utilized an SQLite database and just started, you know, for the first time playing around with that. And connecting it with PHP for an easy way to demonstrate SQL injection of multiple query statement. I got to admit, SQLite's pretty cool.
It is. It is. I've written a couple of utilities that I needed personally at work using SQLite. And, just because I can... It's very easy to use that as a database backend for shell scripting.
Uh-huh.
You know? And it's quite handy because, you know, it's easy to get, easy to install, and you don't have to have, you know, thicker packages around like PHP or anything like that, or big giant databases like Postgres or something like that. But it's pretty cool. I mean, you know, you can take your data and your shell script... use an SQLite, and you can stick it on a floppy and carry it around with you if you wanted to. But good stuff.
Now, when you end up, you know, playing around with SQLite, how many times do you have to issue the quit command before you realize that you have to put a period
dot
before?
Exit.
You sit there and I'm like, quit, and I'm like, what the hell's going on? And then you got to put a semicolon after it, and then it's like, there's something wrong with that, and then it's like, damn it, I got to put a dot in front of it, dot quit.
Get used to it after a while.
Yeah, it started to throw me, and then you get back into like MySQL, and you're like, dot quit, and it's like, what the hell's going on? Good stuff. And you know what? You know, one more complaint this week, and this again is 100% my fault, completely my fault. I know I have ranted and raved repeatedly on how wonderful Arch Linux is. And you got to be smart when you run an Arch Linux. And be careful when you upgrade your system, because they like to drop a new kernel in there, and it doesn't automatically run Grub or Lilo or configure your bootloader for you. So after last week and my system, you know, kind of locking up, I was curious to find out whether it was an issue with the hardware. And I installed Memtest 86. And I got that all ready to run, and I updated the rest of my system, and I was so excited, right, when I got home that after everything was updated and I wanted to try this out, that I rebooted my system because I did it remotely. I did the upgrade remotely. I started it when I was at work and came home. I was so excited, you know, to get back into my system that I forgot to run Lilo. And,
oh boy.
Yeah, and lo and behold, it would not boot the kernel. And I'm like, no problem.
Kernel paddock.
Because I have a backup kernel that I always had installed on there. I go to boot that, and that didn't work either. And I'm like, what the hell happened? So I was essentially out of my system, which really ticked me off. And I sat there twiddling my thumbs, and I'm like, this is one thing I don't have time for. I love Arch, but I'm getting sick of this. I almost threw in the towel and said, I have Slackware ISO. And if I had burned the Slackware ISO to a disk, I'm almost 100% positive I would be running Slackware right now. But I sat there and I'm like, well, I don't have it burned to a disk, but I do have a Gutsy disk. And I'm like, I could just, you know, say to hell with this and install Gutsy. And I said to myself, well, before I do that, I can boot off the Gutsy disk and rescue my system by, you know, change routing into my Arch system and running Lilo and taking care of it that way. And I said, this is what I'll do. I will do that. I will run Lilo. And if it corrects it, I will be back to Arch. But if it doesn't, I'm going to wipe it out and install Gutsy. Lo and behold,
and
I'm still running Arch, and I'm happy. I love Arch. I'm glad.
Well,
speaking of
transitions from Gutsy, or from Arch to Gutsy, Gutsy hates my laptop, man, for whatever reason. I was telling you guys last week about the upgrade. You know, the new kernel just completely not being bootable. I said, "Fuck it. You know what? Let me wipe out the system. Let me install fresh. You know, nice and clean. I backed everything up that I needed." And I tried to do a clean install. The damn live CD would not even come up. Whatever they've done to the next release, you know, it doesn't like my hardware, my laptop. So
maybe it's the ACPI. Crap.
I don't know, possibly. Anyway, I wound up putting first. I was playing around a little bit with Foresight Linux, which is a real interesting distro from the guys from Arpath. But eventually I wound up putting Arch Linux on it, and the install process wasn't as difficult as I remember it. It's there's still some manual steps involved, but you know, there's some auto configuration stuff on each of the, I think there was like 5 or 6 steps that you go through, and there's like some automated stuff that'll do for you. You still have to compile your kernel at the end. It did grub automatically, which was quite nice, actually. You go into the configure grub, it does its thing, and it comes back and says, okay, this is your grub configuration file. You know, is it okay? I looked at it, and it looked okay, and I fired up the machine, and it booted right up, man. Spoke KDE on there. I was up and running pretty quick, man. Half hour, maybe. And I got Arch back on my laptop. It's pretty nice.
I love Arch. I do.
How long did it take you to configure it to the way you liked afterwards, though? That's the question.
The only major thing that I had to do was...
Another 8 hours.
Yeah. No.
6 days later.
This is not Gen 2, man. Gen 2.
A couple.
Katie took about 15 minutes to install. And then this is going over an 802.11b connection, mind you. And the fonts look like ass. So I had to install some fonts. And what else did I do? I set up HAL and DBus. I set up NFS to access my network shares. And, that's about it. I just installed some applications. Pretty good.
Then he installed VMware and got his Windows 2000 running?
No, I haven't installed VMware. No, not yet.
He called his buddy Randy to help him do the install.
But Randy couldn't come over because Randy was too busy looking for ghosties.
Nobody knows who the hell you're talking about.
Yeah. All right, so yeah, I have a couple of more quick mentionables.
No, you're done for the day.
Tough shit. It's round robin this time. I've heard a lot of emails this week about people mentioning things about my comment last week where my hard drive kept running, you know, and they keep pointing me to the same link where there's an HD parm setting that you can apply, and basically what they're saying is, you know, the hard drive spins up and spins down and spins up and spins down constantly. And that is not the problem that I was having with my hard drive. The problem that I was having with mine is that it was constantly spinning, like it was doing a disk index or something like that, file system index. It just kept spinning, and it was spinning for like 4 hours until I got frustrated and just shut the damn computer down. However, I do have a server that did have that issue with the disk spinning, and it was, you know, it kind of reminds you, when you get that, it sort of reminds you of like the click of death, you know? You hear your...
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, you hear your hard drive spin up and then wind back down, and it'll, you know, it'll seat the heads and stuff like that.
And I remember
like
from
once
the...
Once a minute or something, or once every 20 seconds, and drives you crazy. So, yeah, that the HD parm thing, that will fix that pretty well. But this whole deal with my drive just spinning and, you know, spinning for 4 hours, that was not the problem. What did fix that is, you know, basically I uninstalled Ubuntu. And which brings me to another point, right? And this is not just Ubuntu. I've noticed this on a couple of different distributions lately. Some kind of new update for something. I don't even know what it is yet because I don't recall there being an update for Firefox lately. Maybe I'm wrong. You know, maybe if you guys know, you can let me know. But for the last couple of days, every machine I've been using Firefox on, Firefox has been really, really buggy and locking up on me. And I can't recall this happening past a couple of days ago. Specifically, like Gmail has locked it up a couple of times, and some other like heavy resource web pages just locked the damn browser up solid. I don't know what's causing it, but it's happened to me on multiple computers and multiple distributions just for the past couple of days. So I'm interested to know if anybody else has experienced that, and you know, if you can recall what it is that might be causing it, 'cause it's driving me crazy. My, you know, the only salvation in times like this is that, for those of you who don't know, Opera has, you know, recently released their, what is it, version 9 of Opera, which is absolutely fantastic.
Are you running the fish aquarium?
Before version now.
What's that?
Go ahead, Pat.
They actually released an AMD 64 version.
Is it? Yeah. The version I'm using to Opera right now is 9.22. And really, really, absolutely fantastic. It's the only thing that has saved my web browsing experience, you know, kept me from ripping my freaking hair out the last couple of days. I don't know what the hell is going on with Firefox lately, but it's really driving me up the wall. And Opera works fantastic right now. I mean, it was really starting to get good around, like, Opera 7. and I haven't used it a whole lot since then, even though I keep it current on my systems, but just started the past couple of days, and boy, what a difference, you know? It really is pretty cool. So.
Have you tried the Fish Aquarium plugin for that?
Opera? Yeah, a long time ago I did. That's kind of cool, too.
That's pretty fun. Do you have Flash installed?
Yes.
I have had a lot of problems in the past couple of months regarding Flash. I'm wondering if Gmail might have some Flash ads on there that could be causing the lockups. Most of the issues that I've had with Flash, and my wife is, with Firefox, and my wife has been having a lot more problems lately with regards to Flash and Linux, a lot more lockups with Firefox that you have to kill the browser, and then you have to go in and kill the Firefox bin executable if it's still running. It's been very problematic. So I wonder if...
Well, mine just
noticed that also.
Really tight.
What's that?
Mine will lock up really, really tight, and I'll have to go in with Eshkill.
Yeah.
And whack it, you know?
That's...
It just, nothing stops it. It just...
Yeah.
It just locks up tighter than camel's ass while in a sandstorm. And I'm running off Firefox. I'm running as 2.008.
But, I have noticed that a lot with Flash-based stuff, and I'm wondering if it might be the Flash. You know, maybe you want to try removing the Flash plugin and seeing if that remedies your problem.
Might be.
I'd be curious to find out.
I'll have to check that out. But, the thing is, I don't recall having this. Literally, it's been the last 2 days. And I don't recall installing a new version of Firefox or a new version of the Flash plugin or anything like that.
But you know what?
It could be possibly related in the last couple of days. And, like, Gmail doesn't have... I don't get Flash ads on Gmail, you know? That's the one that I primarily noticed it on, but I did notice it a couple of times tonight happen, and I haven't been on Gmail tonight, so... One was that it locked up... When you guys were talking, I was following along, right? You're talking with the LTSP guys. And I went to their site, diskless workstations.com or something like that. And as I was loading that page, it locked up. And it locked up so hard, it pulled networking off my laptop. And I had to, I had to reboot my damn laptop in order to get things working again. It just... Firefox just hosed the whole damn thing. And it's really weird.
I've never had anything lock up that bad, no.
Yeah, it was really, really weird. And I did it twice, so I know that's what it was. But, the third time I went through and I started Opera up instead. And that works fine. So, and that's what I don't understand, right? Because I can view Flash sites and stuff on Opera, too. So it's got to be some kind of, maybe some new library or something that's just been around and I've downloaded and haven't paid attention to, doing updates or whatever. Or perhaps I got a new version of Firefox recently and, haven't been paying attention to that either, and that's what it was. But for some odd reason, man, just the last couple of days has been locking up. And it's really particularly annoying, especially for somebody who uses, web pages so heavily in their work. I can't afford to, be going through my day and all of a sudden have to stop and reload 20 web pages. You know what I mean? It's just a pain in the butt.
I hear your pain, man. I feel your pain. I'd be interested to know what's causing it. What plugins do you use for Firefox? Or extensions? Add-ons?
In Firefox,
yeah,
the only one that I ever really use is the one that you can view the it's like a tidy plugin. It lets you view the source of the web page, and you can run it through tidy if you want to. And that's it, like that. I really don't. I'm pretty minimalist, you know.
I use Forecast Fox and Color Tabs.
See, I don't use any of that stuff.
So you don't have any other add-ons installed, though, right?
No. No, I don't use anything, you know, I don't use anything weird. I mean, I do a lot of coding in PHP and stuff like that. But, you know, the plugins that I use for PHP coding are my eyeballs. I really don't need to have a whole lot of other stuff to go with it. And, so, you know, I just don't put a lot of crap in my web browser that I don't need. And other than being able to open, you know, many web pages at a time for reference and things like that, I just can't figure out what the hell is causing this. It's really, I'm sure it's probably something stupid, but it really has been pissing me off for the last couple of days.
Well, hopefully we'll get some feedback
like I said,
on that.
You know, yeah, but like I said, the good thing about that is that I've switched back over and started using Opera a bit more, and Opera is just phenomenal now. If you haven't tried it, by all means, download it right away. Give it a shot, because it's really nice now.
Opera's pretty good browser. I like Opera. That's a good browser.
Who's snoring?
That was me going... A lot of tech talk this week. What's going on?
It's amazing.
So what are the odds that Arch gets on my nerves because of system updates?
I give it a month.
Very high.
I don't know. I've been running Arch for over a year now.
But it, I would really... What do you normally run? When you sit down at home, Dan, and you're just doing your thing... Normally, because I know you run multiple distributions on the same machine. Which one do you sit down in front of most often?
No, I, you know what? You're wrong. I don't run multiple distributions on the same machine. I gave up doing that. It was a waste of my time. On my workstation, it's Arch, but I'm primarily running my laptop most of the time, and that's what I'm on most of the time, and that's running Gutsy. So I spend probably 95% of my time in Ubuntu these days. I don't really get on my Slack machine because I just SSH into that, or
right.
You know, because you know if I'm doing some stuff, it's using SSH to do all that crap. But I primarily spend my time in Ubuntu. That's what it is for me.
How are you running, Link?
I primarily spend most of my time in Ubuntu, too, because that's what I run at work. But I'm running 6.10 at work, right? And I'm not in any hurry to upgrade, you know? Because it's what I'm working there, what I'm working on there works. And I don't need to have a whole lot of, you know, flashy... compass effects or whatever the hell, and I just need to have it run, and that it does. And then, you know, when I'm at home, I used Ubuntu, and then I got frustrated. Now it's running PC Linux OS, which is fine, but I really don't get anywhere near as much time in front of the computer at home as I do at work.
Quit your job and just run PC Linux OS. Oh, that's all the time.
Sure. If we could get, you know, if we could get enough donations in to keep me employed as the designated tech show distribution analyzer, I would do that in a heartbeat.
You know, you're gonna ditch your wife and family and run Gentoo?
Yeah.
Speaking of distributions, Pat, whatever happened to Kinotix? Is that still around?
It is still around, but they actually haven't had any major releases in a long time. They put out these release candidates every so often, and it's pretty old from what I've seen of it. Now, I know a bunch of the developers left, and I think they're doing is it Cydix? Cydix?
Yeah, me, man. I don't know.
Yeah, so a bunch of people left from Kinotix. Which was a shame because it was a very nice distro. I liked it a lot. It was you know, Debian, but fully... It was Debian Plus, but fully compatible with Debian. It was real nice. At the time, anyway. So, I'm getting back to Arch on my laptop, which is kind of dying, but still kind of holding on barely. My main workstation I got Kubuntu on AMD64. I haven't upgraded it yet. I'm going to probably attempt that maybe this weekend.
Speaking of things...
So hopefully I have a better experience than that I did with the laptop.
Speaking of things dying, wow, I haven't seen Dave Yates on our IRC in a while. And it hurts my feelings.
He's hiding out or something. You must have offended him like you did with, Mark Shuttlesworth.
And Chess Griffin has not been around in a while.
Well, those guys are getting interviewed on other shows, so they don't need us anymore.
They don't care about us anymore.
Yeah, we're just like the stepping stone, you know?
We've launched their careers.
We're the stepping stone for them. They don't cuss and get as nasty as we do, so they'll all go far.
So someday
they'll look back at us and we'll be on show 6,000 something, right? And
no one will know about us still.
That'll be it, yep. And Linux Action Show's got Lug Radio, and we're just left swinging in the dust. That junk just keeps going.
Chucking along, man. Don't feel bad, Dan. We actually got a nice email this week besides the one I just mentioned before.
We did?
Yeah, we got another one from James Robertson. He says, "Hey, Pat, Alan, Link, and Dan, just to say thank you for doing a podcast every week. I've been listening for a while now, and I always look forward to what's new on your show. I'm using Ubuntu on a desktop and Gentoo on the server, and I also have two other Ubuntu servers, an OpenBSD box and a Windows XP home machine. I probably wouldn't have managed things I've done without the help and inspiration from community people like yourselves. Listening to the show, Link is funny talking about Gentoo and the GCC screensaver. Good luck with the podcatcher, Dan. Regards, James."
When did that come in? And did that come to you or to the tech show?
Tech show again. That came yesterday at 3:40.
Dan, are you sending everything from the tech show to your spam folder?
I don't know, but I think I'm going to change my filter now. I think I'm going to have the tech show filter that stuff first, and...
Thank you, everybody, for the nice emails. That's very nice of these guys to send them.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, I've often
wondered... We don't just get hate mail.
I've wondered that, because I'm sitting here and I'm like...
We just mostly get hate mail.
I'm like, you know what? We never get any email anymore. Like, maybe once every couple of weeks we get something. You know, and I never... And then you guys are talking about, oh, I got this mail and that email, and I heard about it. I'm like, well, I never see any of that stuff. It must be getting all filtered into my... I gotta keep an eye out for that. That sucks.
Dan and his email filters.
Yeah. What the hell's going
on? Unicycle wants to know what kind of hate mail we get. Link can answer that.
Oh, jeez. Every crackpotted retard in the universe sends me hate mail. I'm sure this will generate even more.
It seems they tend to focus on you, Link, for some reason.
They do. It's a personal attack. Like, when something is great, you get emails that go to all of us, right? They'll say, "Oh, you guys are great. I love listening to you. You know, so-and-so does this, and so-and-so does that, and so-and-so does that, and it's all really great." But see, when there's a hate mail comes, the hate mail comes and it has a header of, like, the subject line says, "Link is an asshole," right? And then from there, it just berates me. It's a personal attack. Every crackpot retarded asshole in the universe that sends a hate mail sends it directly to me. I can't figure out the hell the problem is with that. What it is that makes people hate me so much or something.
The first time you come up with a URL to a horrible website, you get nailed.
Yeah, and they nail me even after I said multiple times, "Don't go to this. This is specifically for Dan." And, like, Dan has put up how many hundreds of these things, right? First time I lay one on Dan, you know, I get crackpotted hate mail. You know, relentless stuff, just doing personal attacks. And, you know, and that does... After a few years, that kind of stuff drains on you. It makes it difficult for me to say things every now and then that that I would like to say, because I just get sick of getting hate mail, and it always seems to come to my inbox.
Maybe I'm getting hate mail, too, but it just gets dropped right into my trash.
Yeah, Dan would never know if he got a hate mail. He doesn't look at any.
Yeah, well, but actually, Dan got a hate fan at Ohio Linux Fest. Not this past year, but the year before. I remember standing there, and some guy comes up to Dan, he's like, "You're going to hell." And I'm standing up thinking, is this guy like kidding with him? Is he for real?
Well, that's at least respectable, right? Somebody comes up and tells you that face to face.
Exactly. At least you can respect somebody for at least having the balls to come up to you.
They don't just send you a barrage of emails calling you a scumbag.
What are you going to do?
Exactly. Keep rolling. We'll have Eric Raymond on so he can commiserate with Link.
Yeah, there you go.
No, because then Link will just piss him off or something.
No, I like Eric Raymond. I just, you know, it's you know, Richie that... Richie rubs me the wrong way.
Richie.
Remember when we used to get... Remember that like, our first year... We were always getting, like, every couple of weeks we get this email from a guy. I can't remember, man, what was his name?
Oh, yeah, it's Richard something.
Was it Richard or was it... And he would just go off and tell us everything that was wrong with the show.
Wasn't that Chuck or something like that?
Oh, man.
I don't remember.
I know which one you're talking about.
I know who you're talking about, too.
I remember the guy, yeah. If it was my show and blah, blah, this and blah, blah, that, and I would do this, and you guys are doing this the wrong way, and we're all asking him, you know, well, where's your frickin' show? You know what I mean? We'd like to hear it. Well, you know, that whole armchair expert thing.
And then we got
to
email.
He used to bitch about the sound quality, too, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he produced something or another.
I think he did produced audio or something. Your sound quality is so bad, I can't believe it's that bad.
I think
sounds like you guys are talking between two tin cups or something. I don't know.
Yeah, people have given up on complaining about our audio quality, which is a nice thing.
Well, it's come a long way. I mean, if you listen to a couple
episode
of the first
one.
Shows and then listen to this, you know, it's considerably better. And you know, and in this case, we're way far apart too.
We've all gotten used to the fact that we're like 32K, that's why.
Right.
Or no, are we 24? Yeah, we're really low, but either way.
Oh, yes, the memories. So, Link, can we take away the oldest continually running Linux show to... The longest running Linux show?
I think so.
I think so too. I think it's time to drop the continuous.
Haven't we been running longer than the Linux show?
The Linux show did 182 shows, I believe.
Yeah, but how long were they running? That's the thing.
I don't know. I think it was maybe 4 or 5 years. But they used to take really long breaks. Like, they do a show, well, then like,
but
not
you
come
know
back
what?
For like 3 weeks.
As far as I'm concerned, like, if you do a show and then you don't do another show for 2 months, you're not continually running, you know what I mean? Continually running is like running on the same schedule.
I mean, don't get me wrong, I miss those guys. I enjoyed listening to that show. They were the first, like, Linux show, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, those guys are trailblazers for doing that.
Yeah, the Volume Control got a really good workout during that show.
Yeah.
I think we should have them all on at once. That might be interesting.
I'd love to do that, but I think
that would be cool.
I don't think they'll spring for it. I think we could get most of them on at once.
Yeah.
We might be able to get like Doc and
Russ.
Who else
Eric.
Could we get? We could get Russ. We could get Eric on. That's probably about it.
That's not too bad.
And Doc, I'd have to call on his cell phone from, like, you know, Egypt.
From Denmark. I'm in the Czech Republic.
Where's Doc?
right here.
This is Slovakia.
Yeah. That would be pretty cool, though. We really should try and do that.
I don't know. I heard that Doc Searls is going to be the new editor-in-chief of Linux Journal.
Awesome.
They haven't made an announcement yet, but that's what I've heard through the grapevine. He's a good writer.
Speaking of which, we got to get together and decide about what we're going to send them for our little banner ad.
Yes, we got to give the winners some subscriptions, right?
Uh huh.
Well, it seems to be a two-horse race for the most part.
I don't know. I like the one with the mudflap chicks on them.
1970s retro.
I think that was a nice one.
Some really nice submissions.
Awesome stuff, you know. I really I had no idea that we had such talented people that listened to the show, you know, and they just kept resubmitting. And it's so difficult to choose between them because I like all of them. You know what I mean?
Can we get both of them?
Most of them, except for, you know, the one that Dan had with the dude shitting in a bag or whatever.
Speaking of that,
put that on the website. But
the
know,
two guys that
funny.
Kept coming up with the best two guys were Heathen X and RF Garen. I think that's mm-hmm. Richard Garen. Is that the same guy that did the guest spot on Linux Reality? I think it might be.
Heathen X or?
Yeah, that's him.
Which guest spot? Inkscape, right?
Yeah, he did the Inkscape. That's what he did all these graphics for.
Yeah. He did. I believe he did do episode.
He did two episodes of Linux Reality.
Is it 42? Or is it 62? Or I was listening to it the other day. The GIMP one and the Inkspot ones. Inkscape one, sorry. Inkscape one. Fantastic.
Yeah, the last two episodes he did.
Yes.
Graphics.
Good stuff.
Yes. That's the guy who's one of the guys who submitted all the cool graphics.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Richard, good stuff, man. Him and Heathen X were the best two guys, man. They just kept pouring it on.
Hey, you know what? I was curious to see how our Frapper map's doing. And, of course, with Frapper, you still can't see easily how many people are subscribed to your map, which pisses me off. So I started looking through the members.
That's what you
got
to do. You got to go into the search thing and type the name in.
Type what name in?
There's a search field. You go in there and you type in the Linux Link Tech Show, and then it'll come back with a listing, and the listing will have how many people are on.
Oh, well, I will do that in just a second. But I went to page 14 of our listener map listeners. Listing our listeners, and I saw that we have a listener named H-Bomb from Missouri. Oh, I'm sorry, Missoula?
Mississauga?
No, Montana. I think it's Montana.
Oh, Montana.
Wait, MT is Montana, right?
Yeah, it's Montana.
Yeah. Missoula, Montana. And wow. At first I thought this could not be one of our listeners, because
going to be a Dennis Walsh tycoon.
This woman is too beautiful to be one of our listeners. But I thought it was somebody posting, you know, like, oh, here's a... But apparently she is a systems network admin, and she's on our map and Twit's map and Linux users map.
Montana.
So I wonder if she's still listening, and if she is, thank you for listening.
Yeah, hello to Missoula, Montana.
Woo-hoo. Yeah, we should do Frapper Max shoutouts. Maybe we should start that again.
Hey, man, something's not right here. How many maps do we have?
We have two.
Because one has 90.
Yeah, I created one, not realizing we already had one created.
There everybody goes, the Frapper. We have 1,743 people.
That's a couple.
Not bad.
Yeah, not bad at all. Who's our guest next week?
Let's see, who do we have?
Well, you could look right on the TLLTS calendar.
Yeah.
On the new...
Lo and behold, Frapper is Flash-based, and it locked up my Firefox session.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Cool. We've got Ken Van Dyne.
Now try it, try it with Opera.
I'm not going to dick around with it on this machine, because I don't want it to lock up something else. Speaking of that, I ran the MEM test 86 on this machine, and Doofus didn't read the anything about MEM test, so I kept looking over here and seeing, wow, it's running an awful lot of tests. It's taking a long time. I let it run for over 24 hours. I didn't realize it would just keep iterating through the same tests over and over again. And I thought it had like a preset number, and it passed every single test, but I let it run for 24 hours. Because I'm an idiot.
Keep that RAM stick a workout there, buddy.
Oh, it came back. It came back. Didn't lock up permanently. Anything else, ladies and gentlemen? Wait, that's right. We were going to say who is on the show next week.
Ken Van Dyne from the Foresight Linux Project.
Excellent. And then we have coming up. Whip out the calendar. Go to the next month.
Brad Kuhn.
Bradley Kuhn from the Software Freedom Law Center coming up.
Hey, Dan, talking to the microphone.
Software Freedom Law Center.
You're getting farther and farther away.
All right. So anything else for the good of the cause before I play us out of here?
What do you got
for me? Thanks for listening, everybody.
I'm going to play some dual core today because that's what I have queued up, and I haven't gotten... I got to figure out how to pull that stream down, Alan. Sorry.
Not a problem. Would have been a good one for today. But
check out the new website. Send us your ideas and comments.
Send us your love mail. We love you.
Only a few pages left for me to do on there. Once I'm done with it, I'm just gonna roll it right over. So enjoy the old ugly site while you can.
Ah. I wonder though if I put this URL right over here. What it will actually do. Can I play this whole song? What song is it?
Can't hear you, Dan.
What song is it, Alan?
The song is Slasher Flick. And it's by a band called Proxy. If it works, of course. And I dug that up off of Machine Mania, I guess that's how you pronounce it. But anyway, it's one of those movies made off the game engines. It's called Bloodspell. That's how you get it.
I found her dead upon the floor. Her heart and eyes were missing. The camera cuts away to show the star and boyfriend kissing. Trapped in an 80s slasher flick, whether dead or slowly rising. Trapped in an 80s slasher flick with a fucking chance of surviving.
Alright, I will play it, and I will do the dual core one too, because I have it queued up. I'm gonna have to play this through Firefox. I hate flash based players, they never seem to work right.
You just hate flash.
I'm sick of flash. Anyway, here it is. Slasher flick, we'll see you all next week. Right?
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night. Good night.
were missing. The camera cuts away to show the star and boyfriend kissing. Trapped in an 80s slasher flick, whether dead or slowly rising. Trapped in an 80s slasher flick with no fucking chance of surviving. Outside, the killer roams around, his victim's getting closer. He throws her down into the ground. This death is so much grosser. Trapped in an 80s slasher flick, whether dead or slowly rising. Trapped in an 80s slasher flick with no fucking chance of surviving.
There we go. So, let me actually play our crap out of here. What the hell?
I died last night when I woke.
Probably just goes right on to the next one.
Yeah. Ah. Oh, here we go.
Little core income.
Yup. Where's the alarm? Right place, right time. Somehow they know to show up and fight crime. Robbing the bank, back alley mugging. Is a citywide surveillance or am I just bugging? Still in progress, crooks caught in action. If this locked down, why does crime still happen? How do they know? Can we really be sure? Probably more cameras in 1984. From the heart of downtown, the neighboring suburbs. Rail yard set at the city limit outskirts. Criminals beware, prepare for a sentence. Superheroes always have the quickest apprehension. They know when you're sleeping, it's kind of profound. The scary part of it is they know where and how. Intelligence, network, informants undercover. Really makes you think, almost makes you wonder. Like, open your eyes, prepare for the truth. Superheroes, criminals are all in cahoots. Did the bikes get hacked on the criminal's route? It could have been a superhero all in cahoots. They will admit with words that the mission is a burden. They feel a bit disturbed or a little introverted. Take a look at Batman, he sticks to his ways by himself in the mansion, alone in a cage. He could have been an actor, a socialite instead. The guy loves darkness, messed up in the head. Narc when he catches you, just take the offer. A word to describe it? Stalker, long overdue. You've seen all the clues, now put them all together. Take a look at the truth, decide for yourself. Overturn judgment, we should have the police force defending the public. Deviant stalkers, must be a mess up. These are the people we select to protect us. Everybody get it? The script is on the walls. I'd rather have the NSA listen to my calls. Open your eyes, prepare for the truth. Superheroes, criminals are all in cahoots. Did the bikes get hacked on the criminal's route? It could have been a superhero all in cahoots. So what if they do you wrong or even run you off? They jumped the Constitution because they're above the law. Means to an end if you just believe the suffix. Trust the vigilantes. I don't call it justice. Seems a bit strange to believe
the SUL results into video entertainment.
On any pay, the lights on upstairs, but there's nobody home. A few teeth short of a fine tooth comb. Pajamas for costumes, look, it's no lie. And what about the underwear? It's on the outside. Maybe they overslept and had to leave fast. But what kind of people put the boxes on glass? Capes, masks, knee-high boots. Do I need to keep going to reveal further proof? Would you still trust them if you really knew? Might be a superhero, but they're in cahoots. Open your eyes, prepare for the truth. Superheroes, criminals are all in cahoots. Did your bikes get hacked on the criminal's route? It could have been a superhero, all in cahoots. Open your eyes, prepare for the truth. Superheroes, criminals are all in cahoots. Did your bikes get hacked on the criminal's route? It
could have been a superhero, all in cahoots.
So we can paint anything we want?
Anything at all.
How about if I paint your fine ass? Yeah, with my tongue brush.
Shut up. Just shut up. It's all over.
That's all she wrote.
That's it.
And with that, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night, Alan.